Welcome to Sport Unpacked, a regular podcast that explores issues in sport and the views of researchers at La Trobe University. I'm Professor Russell Hoy, Director of La Trobe Sport, your host, and my guest today is Merin Sherwood, a PhD candidate studying with the Centre for Sport and Social Impact here at La Trobe University. Merin is a former news journalist working in major events, and she's doing a research project looking at who controls the sport media we consume. So today we're going to explore questions such as, how do sport stories reach consumers? Are these all real stories or the product of great public relations? And who controls what sport stories we consume? Welcome, Merin.
Hi, Russ. Thanks for having me.
Media coverage of sport comes in many forms or types, ranging from simple sports results to scandals of poor athlete behaviour. Can you explain to us what sort of forms or types these come in?
I suppose, just as you said, Russ, it is important to note that sport news isn't just about results, what just happened in the game. Just like general news categories, there's a lot of different information that comes through that is sports news. So it might be a human interest story that's not even in the sports section of the paper, that's still sports media news if it's about sport. Obviously, a scandal of poor athlete behaviour is still sports news. The current Australian Crime Commission investigations into sport in Australia have, a lot of the reporting has been done by business or news journalists, but that's still sports media news because it's about sport. It's also important to note that sports media is also not just the news we hear on TV, on radio and in newspapers. It includes live coverage of sport. So the TV broadcast, the radio commentary that we listen to from the footy on weekend, this is all sports media content. So it's not just a narrow kind of here's the results from the footy on the weekend. It really encompasses a whole news industry.
And a lot of that would sort of cover the human interest angle as well, wouldn't it, in sport, in terms of people, you know, overcoming adversity in sport and their performances?
Yeah, certainly. I think because that is what makes sport great, is all these stories about how people come back and can have these amazing performances. You know, stories like Eric the Eel at the Sydney Olympics, they get people really, you know, interested, and you can see how sport can be used for development and really to create that social good. So that's why these stories are really popular within sport as well. I think it's also interesting that the business of sport is actually becoming a lot more reported on as well, which I think is a good thing for the sports media industry. It's not just about the news. There's certainly a lot of those human interest stories and sport business as well.
Media stories come to us on many platforms these days, and you could describe them as channels, really. Can you explain what those sort of platforms and channels are and how they've evolved over the last few years?
I suppose, really, to start with, the first sort of media is traditional media, which is radio, TV, print media or newspapers. So these have been the traditional forms of media where people consume their news. So these are still the, I suppose, prestigious media channels that we get our news from in Australia. They're trusted. That's who we go to first if we want to find out the news. But particularly recently, there's a lot of new media out there that's really changing up the way that we view our news, not just in sport, across the industry, but particularly in sport, it's had a really interesting impact. So when I talk about new media, thinking things like online-only websites or broadcasts, blogs, places like the Sporting Journal, which is a website run by a 14-year-old who actually managed to get accreditation to go to the London Olympics. It's not necessarily a mainstream media outlet, but there are people that read that site for their sports news now. So there's a lot of different channels. What I think is also really interesting within new media is also media that is now coming from organisations. So things like NBL TV, where the Basketball Australia is actually running their own media channel for the NBL. So instead of actually watching games on TV, I think you can still watch a couple of NBL games on TV, but you can actually just log in and watch the stream online. A company like AFL Media as well, they run the AFL website. They have content developed over a lot of different channels. So they have video as well as just web content. And they're really trying to push and actually become like a real media organisation. I think that this is really interesting because it was actually represented in the Australian Sports Commission Media Awards last year that AFL Media was actually nominated for a media award. So I think that that really shows the legitimacy of these new media as well. It's not just organisational media. They may have actually been accepted as a media company.
So all those new forms of sort of media platforms that we're receiving our news through, that sort of suggests that There's quite a complex process these days in how the media stories on sport get to us as public consumers. Can you talk us through the general process of how a sports journalist might generate their news story and then disseminate it to the public?
Sure. I think first what I'll do is talk about my experience when I was a newspaper journalist at the Canberra Times. So I started back in 2006, so there's actually been a lot of rapid change since then. So I think my experience then is not necessarily the same as it would be now. But essentially I would come into work every day and I usually knew that there are a few things that coming up that I would have to report on. There might be a press conference that day for an AFL match that was happening on the weekend. So I would go along to the press conference, maybe ask some questions, come back and write some sort of preview story. Other things that I would have to do is I was in charge of a junior sports section where I had to sort of, you know, lay out 8 pages of content a week. So obviously there's a lot of planning that went into that, getting pictures at schools, getting permission, all that kind of stuff. So there's generally a whole lot of different things that are going on every day, but at the same time, it's quite sort of routinized, you know, whereas a news journalist might come in and not be exactly sure what they're going to do every day. Certainly there are rounds where people are assigned, okay, I'm doing education or I might be doing science. They might have a better idea, but a news journalist might not know exactly what they're going to cover every day. Whereas sports journalists can certainly plan ahead and plan things a little bit better. So most days, as I said, I would come in, I had a general idea of what I would do. I would set out what kind of story I thought I might be doing, particularly if it was a preview story. I would put the call out, speak to people, get different sources and put together a story, usually for the next day. In 3 years I was there, I was generally writing 3 to 4 stories a day, somewhere about 1,000 to 1,500 words, which is quite a big output, but I know now that that's nothing really compared to what the guys are doing. The journalist at the Canberra Times might have to go to a press conference in the morning and immediately file a story for the website, which then means they have to hold back some quotes and information for the newspaper the next day. So they will go back to the office and file a story for the website, hold back some quotes for the next day, and then go back and maybe try and speak to someone else to bolster that story for the next day. They might then tweet about it. If they have a match to cover on the weekend, that usually now involves live tweeting the scores as well. So as well as sitting there and trying to craft your story for the next day's paper, and usually if games are on Friday or Saturday night, you only have a very small, short turnaround to actually get that story in. You have to be live tweeting as well. So there are a lot of different things that now go into being a journalist, and I think that's evident in all the different platforms that are now available. So if you look at the Age website, the journalists there are not just writing for the newspaper, they're writing different stories for the website, they're on Twitter, they're also making videos. So I think in that sense, most journalists these days are not just one platform, they're actually multimedia journalists. I think the other interesting point to note here is that my experience at the Canberra Times was not necessarily indicative of someone who was at a major paper like the Daily Telegraph or The Age. Because I was a lot of the time dealing with community sport, I could just pick up the phone and call whoever I wanted. If I wanted to speak to the local AFL Canberra captain, I would call him up and have a chat. Whereas once you go that step higher, it's actually a lot harder to get access. And I suppose maybe harder isn't even the right word, but it's just a lot more structured.
So when you say it gets harder the higher you go, you mean in terms of the professional levels of sport and the scale of the sort of the money involved in the athlete and the team they're associated with?
I think certainly it's a difference between professional leagues and community-based leagues. So for example, when I was reporting on community AFL in Canberra, so the local AFL Canberra League, as I said, I could pick up the phone and call anyone I want. When I was dealing with the AFL teams that came and played in Canberra, so which was usually the Sydney Swans and the Bulldogs and a few others, I would need to pick up the phone and call their media manager, who acts as the person who would get access for me to players. So it creates that other person. Obviously, most of the time, they sort of work in a facilitating role. They really help you get the people you want to speak to. But sometimes it it becomes really hard if you're trying to chase a story and you have an idea in your head. You know, this player, last time he came to Manukau Oval, he kicked 5 goals. So it'd be great to speak to him again and find out if he likes playing here, what kind of chances he thinks his team has this weekend, if he can have the same sort of performance. But the media manager might say, he's done too much media this week, he can't speak to you, which therefore means you have to change your story. So it's just a bit of a different process to go through. And I think a perfect example of this is Nathan Lyon used to play in the local Canberra cricket competition, obviously now an Australian test spinner. I used to call him up every week to do a preview, chat to him about the pitch condition, about who he was going to put in his team, call him up on a Saturday night to make sure that he got the scorecard in on time. Obviously now, if I wanted to speak to him, now that he's a member of the Australian cricket team, I would need to go through their media team. I can't just pick up the phone and call him. A major reason behind this is because obviously there'd be so many people who were trying to now get in contact with him. There does have to be some sort of structure in the way that his media is organised, but it certainly makes an interesting case study to see how that changes as they move through the levels of sport.
So it seems that there's apart from the independent journalist sort of thinking, okay, what stories can they go and chase up or write up that day and then deliver through various platforms, there's two other sort of players in this space. There's the editor back at your institution where you're writing for or producing the story for, who would obviously have some say in the tone and nature of the story, but also the gatekeeper, if you like, about at the within the sport organisation who is mediating your access to individuals to create the story. How does that work in reality?
It's really interesting, and it's really hard to actually, it's a hard thing to do as a journalist on a daily basis to actually take that into account, because you may have your editor saying, oh, this story would be really great. And then you try and put in the call to the media manager saying, hey, I would like to speak to this player. They say they're not available. So it's hard to actually get that balance. I suppose what I would do is if my editor came to me and said, I think this story is great, or I went to them with the pitch saying, I think that this is a really good story, and the club or media manager wouldn't allow access to that direct person, the next step is to then try and get people around them to talk about that, which sometimes came off and eventually ended up in a better story. But I think there's still ways to actually get around that initial no and create that story. But I think where we're getting to at this stage in the production of sports media news is that it's becoming increasingly difficult to speak to people around that initial person as well. So it's really becoming hard to tell the stories that as a journalist you would like to tell, because the access is just so limited.
So it sort of begs the question then, if your access is limited and you can't get the entire story background to actually write the most objective view of the news, who's really in control then of the stories around sport that we consume every day?
Well, I think this is a hard question to answer at the moment, and that's hopefully what I'm trying to look at in my PhD research, is actually how much control does the media manager have? At this stage, we know that these people exist within clubs. They're a pretty new development within Australia. They've sort of been around since the mid-90s, this position of a media manager within professional clubs. It's not just clubs as well, pretty much all the national sporting organisations, all state sporting bodies, and of course representatives like the AOC and Commonwealth Games Association all have media people as well. So I think it's really hard to say whether or not the media manager is the person that actually has the control within the organisation, and that's why we actually need to explore this role that they're conducting more. Because it might be, if I put in a request to a media manager and they ask the player, perhaps it's up to the player, maybe it's their discretion, maybe it's the coach's discretion. We don't actually know a lot about the decision-making process at that end, who actually decides whether or not the player or coach or member of management should be available to talk to the media. How does that decision-making process work? I think that's a really important question.
And I think it would probably be more contentious when you get into poor player behaviour or a drug scandal. You getting access to an individual athlete or player would be mediated by, you know, their player manager, their, in some cases for younger players, their parents, the media manager with the sport organisation they're associated with. So it becomes even more complicated, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and I think that's why this study really warrants doing, because there are so many different elements that the media manager has to deal with. It's not just actually taking the request, asking the person that has been requested if they want to do it. There's a whole lot of different elements they have to consider. And so I think it could be quite easy for me as a journalist or an ex-journalist to sit here and say, it's really hard to talk to players, but I don't know enough of the process that's happening at the other end. And I'm not sure whether they know much about that process or the best way for it to work, because there is a real lack of research on this area.
And there seems to be some real parallels with the politicians' world about having a mind to looking after local MPs and ministers and prime ministers in terms of mediating what they're saying, who they're saying it to, when they can say it. And it seems that sport is sort of going down that path in certain ways.
It is. It's certain. I think there are certain very certain parallels. Sorry. I think there are definitely parallels to politics, because I suppose one of the things that I immediately think about is political cliches. I mean, we think about sport and it's full of cliches. It's just very, very repetitive sometimes. And I think that's the same thing with politics. And a criticism that a lot of people have had lately about Australian politics is we don't really know what the politicians are trying to say. I think we're getting to that stage in sports media as well. And I suppose it's a question of whether this is actually okay as well. Do we just want sport to be there for entertainment value? Do we not really mind what kind of stories come out? Are we happy to just speak to whoever the club decides to put up? Or do we actually want, I suppose, more in-depth, more behind-the-scenes news from sport? Do we want to actually get to know these people in sports clubs again? Or are we going to be happy with this new sort of sports media model?
It also seems that the sport organisations themselves are shaping what sort of stories they want written about their organisations and their athletes. Have you seen evidence of those media managers sort of shaping the news of the day and actually creating the agenda around an athlete or a story, which is sort of the fine line between news and public relations, and they're shaping what news is reported about them?
Well, again, I think that is a question that is quite hard to answer at this stage, which is obviously why this study is again needed, because again, I don't really know if they're making a conscious decision to say, I'm going to set the news agenda today and put up this player over another player. Whether it's just them working in their everyday job thinking, oh, okay, this person is maybe about to go and compete in a world championships, maybe I will just put them up. Whether they actually think about it more in depth, if that person is, say, John Stephenson, who is obviously quite controversial, does his views reflect back on what the media manager would be prepared to do with him as a player in terms of media commitments? So there's so many questions there that we just don't know. I know, certainly from my perspective, working as a journalist, I kind of get a bit frustrated when people talk about the media or the media agenda. And because working as an everyday journalist, I didn't necessarily have those agendas in my mind. It was just what I could do day to day. And so I think a study that actually looks at what media managers do, certainly the decisions that they do make, there's no doubt that they do end up influencing the news that is produced. But whether they actually set out with that in mind, that's a different question.
So it seems like quite a sort of complex area to do an investigation in. Could you sort of outline to us what are the challenges you're facing in getting your research actually undertaken and completed?
I think the first challenge is, as I keep saying, it's such a new area. There have been a few studies in the US that really focus on college sports information directors, so it's a very narrow field in that sense, but it's given a good starting point for me to look at this research in Australia. And at the same time, because it's so new, it's really hard to actually put together the sampling frame. So the first stage of my research is basically just going to be trying to set a research base for the industry in Australia. So I'm going to do that by a survey that sort of aims to look at demographics and roles. So looking at the sampling frame for this survey was actually quite hard as well, because it's how far down do you go, how many organisations actually have media people. So it was a matter of really just doing some searching and looking at how many different organisations have media people. So, you know, someone like the Victorian Cricket Association with the Bushrangers, and they obviously have a media person to run that, whereas someone like, you know, the State Sporting Association for lacrosse or bowls probably wouldn't. So the way that I organised my sampling frame was to look at professional and semi-professional sports clubs in Australia, the national governing bodies with a disability that were funded by the Sports Commission in the 2012-2013 financial year, and then also looking at the COMPS sports, so Coalition of Major Participation in Professional Sports, looking at their state bodies, which basically means cricket, tennis, all the football clubs, as well as netball, because on a basic search, it seems that they all have a media manager or a communications person within their organisation. And I suppose that's the other issue, was actually defining who is a communications person. So originally, while I wanted to look at the role of media manager, because that's who I'd sort of been familiar with in my work, it seems like there's a lot of people with different job titles competing essentially communications tasks. So actually then looking at who is a communications person, I defined by work practices that have been in the literature. So things like sending a media release, setting media guidelines or media policy, just fielding media inquiries. If the person does this within the organisation, I've defined them as an Australian sports communication professional.
Okay, so once you've actually done your survey and you've spoken to people who work in the industry, what sort of impact or outcomes do you think your research is going to have once you've got it finished?
Well, I hope that it will provide a really good research base for the industry within Australia. As I said, there hasn't been anything done, so I think it will be really good to actually start this research base so we can have further inquiry. Hopefully, it will allow us to understand a bit more about the way sports media is produced and determine whether this is a good model. As I said, whether it is a good idea just to report on, I suppose, the surface things, whether Chris Judd is going to play this weekend in the NAB Cup. Is that an important story? Do we really care about it that much? And is the production of news and all the influence behind it, is it actually just limiting to that story? I don't really know at the moment, but hopefully I might be able to find out a bit more information in this study. Also, I think it's really important because there are now universities offering specific sports media courses, including here at La Trobe. So actually finding some information for the new students coming in who want to work in this industry to say, actually, this is what people out there have been doing and how they work, and really provide that information for the next generation.
Well, great. It really sounds like your research is going to have a very applied outcome as well to shape how people work in this space. So thank you very much. That's it for today. My thanks to Merrin Sherwood, a PhD candidate studying with the Centre for Sport and Social Impact here at La Trobe University. Thanks also to Matt Smith from the digital media team for his great production. You can also follow us on Twitter, Merrin Sherwood at Mez_Sherwood, and me at Russ Hoy. You can find a copy of this podcast on the La Trobe University website under the News tab, and also at www.latrobe.edu.au/CSSI.